Malkia Stampley, when we spoke just over a year ago, you were directing a lovely but relatively little known, though Pulitzer Prize winning play called Primary Trust. Now you're directing a much beloved holiday classic, now in its 48th year, A Christmas Carol at the Goodman Theater in Chicago. How exactly do you bring something new to this old chestnut?
That is the question.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. I'm Austin Titchener, co-artistic director of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, now in its 20th year, number 989, Malkia's Christmas Carol. Malkia Stampley is directing the Goodman Theater's 48th annual production of Charles Dickens's A Christmas Carol. It's my fourth year as part of this epic production, but my first year as a member of the regular cast after performing that covetous old sinner himself, Ebenezer Scrooge, at designated performances for the last 3 years. There are other changes happening this year, both on stage and behind the scenes, and it was fun to take time out of rehearsal last week to talk to my director, Malkia, about how her background and history with this story informs her take on this year's production.
I have such fond memories of being in A Christmas Carol in Milwaukee, having seen and worked on Christmas Carol at the Goodman. So I felt a lot of pressure. And I started to ask that same question. And what started coming to me was, we are telling the same story, meaning we aren't changing Charles Dickens' story, but we all come to it different every year. Yeah. And I think the world then comes to it differently every year. What's most relevant this time? There's so many things to pull out. And so it's that. It's what message does Chicago need? That's what I kept asking.
That's such a good question, because that's always the question, right? Why this play? Why now? You know, the script hasn't changed generally, except for minor little tweaks here and there. The physical production of the Goodman Theater production remains the same epic and beautiful thing. And I think and it's one of the largest. It's certainly the largest production I've ever been in. And it's a huge, wonderful, sincere and dramatic and funny production, all of which I love. But you're leaning into, so far we're in the third week of rehearsal as we record, you're leaning into some lovely, timely thoughts about immigration and population and representation. Can you talk about some of the research you shared with us in the rehearsal room about the numbers of different kinds of people who were in London in the 19th century? They weren't just old, stuffy white people.
No. And that is what is so amazing about this story. I'd like to imagine that Charles Dickens also was just not writing about white people. He was writing about class. He was writing about children. He was writing about capitalism, and he was talking about greed. That doesn't have to have a color attached to it. And as I was looking at different photos. I mean, photography was relatively new at that time, but even a couple decades later, and all the history I was looking into, you had people coming from all over the world.
Yeah.
All over the world. And
then now, London is a hub for people from all over the world.
Absolutely. And because slavery was well long as abolished in London or in the UK. It was it, you know, I get the question, oh, well, slavery was still happening. Yes, in the United States. So, and doesn't mean that you didn't have servants and working class and those who were the misfortunate, but you had Black people and people from Asia and the Middle East, who were, and from the Caribbean, who were entrepreneurs, yeah, who were skilled, who were sailors coming in, or tradespeople. And then some were also homeless. You just saw such a variety of people. And what I've always loved about the Goodman's production is that it's been diverse, meaning representing all different kinds of colors and types of people for decades. And yeah, I went, well, why not lean into that? Let's lean in and celebrate it within the different sounds and maybe different music and maybe different looks as well. So just wanted to like turn up the dial of what already was being done. Everyone didn't sound the same, like they were from the same London neighborhood.
The same London neighborhood that all went to the same drama programs where they all learned the same way to pronounce these 19th century locutions. No, I love that because there is colorblind casting, but then there is color conscious casting. And this year, for the first time in my memory or that I've seen in any other production, people are speaking in accents that seem to match what they look like, which seems really right. And I hope people respond to it because I think it's beautiful.
I hope so too. And you know, it's because it's, we both know it's been done so many times. It's a people feel ownership of the story. Even some, you know, just colleagues or donors or, you know, folks who find out that I'm directing it, they go, so what are you doing this year? And they immediately follow with, and because I didn't like this, or I really hope you keep this. And people have thoughts. And so then that's one thing that maybe, yes, in my recollection, I haven't heard of that before either, having someone speaking with a Korean British accent, for example, in the production. And I go, even if they don't respond well to it, it doesn't mean that we are telling a different story. And whatever is agitating anyone in hearing a different accent, but the same story, I go, maybe you need to audit your ownership of this story and what this story has to be. And can it be the same story if you see a Black person speaking in a Nigerian accent, but telling the same story and being that same human who's broken or who needs love and who can tell the story? Can you appreciate them the same? That's that. And so we'll see.
And if you can't, how much of a Scrooge does that make you?
Well, exactly. Mm-hmm. Thing is, it's the cast. I mean, Chicago just has tremendous talent. And so we're not talking about people who can't do it. Like there's so much talent that's untapped in this production. You know, and it's a lot of shows. We don't have people doing backflips and things all over the place or
yet. It's early days. Never say never.
It's early, Austin. It's never too late for you to do a couple backflips.
Not me.
But it's the, I also then was, as I was preparing, just thinking about the wonderful that we have, what can I pull out? How can I feature the craftsmanship? What can I feature of the skill set of our cast rather than making everyone fit into this box? How could we adjust to you all? And that's been so fun because it's meant collaboration. It's meant pivoting when need to, and, you know, refining in a way that fits us and this year versus 48 years. And that's been the most, I'd say, rewarding part so far, because I just see the buy-in that everyone has and how the energy in the room with talent who's been a part of it, whether 18 years or 2 months, and you and they're matching each other's energy. It's a beautiful space. And I think it is because everyone is going, great, what else can I add to it now that I'm able to bring my whole self?
Well, and I mean, like Shakespeare, this story particularly is universal and it belongs to everybody. And though you talk about, I never even thought about that issue of you as a director having to endure the people going, oh, you're directing it? Good. Here's what I didn't like and here's what you need to keep. That's a whole different level of pressure. But I know that, yes, the Goodman gets people who've been coming to this show from generations, four generations. But I also know from having played Scrooge and meeting these new young people who are seeing it for the very first time. And so these new generations of people are coming to see it and coming to see perhaps themselves on stage in this story in a way that hasn't always been possible, which I think is amazing.
Oh, yes. And I'd add on to that. Maybe someone whose grandparents didn't grow up in this country, and they come and they get to see themselves on stage, and maybe a part of them that maybe they've locked away in a key, or it's just change as they've been in this country for a long time. Like I'm hopeful, and even talking with my colleagues at the Goodman about how do we celebrate and amplify the diversity that was in London, that is in Chicago, that is around the world in major cities today. And it's instead of trying to prove our humanity as people of color, instead of going, look, it's for everybody. Yes, that is true. It is in the subtle ways of just you accepting what I have to say in the way that I have to say it. It is in our marketing, instead of it being, and look at this Black person and look at this Korean person, it's at Mr. and Mrs. Cratchit. Yeah. It's look at Tiny Tim. And that's been wonderful too. Just sometimes with the way things are politically and the way things are been polarized so much, it's you sometimes as a person of color feel like you need to prove yourself. You need to prove it. And I'm challenging myself by not having to do that anymore. These actors and designers and the staff I get to work with, all of you, it's been a treat that everyone's bought into this being everyone's story and we all can just be ourselves. So I hope people enjoy it. I really do.
Hi. I'm Lewis Byard, the author of such novels as The Pale Blue Eye, Mr. Timothy, and Jackie and Me. And you, you lucky cuss, are listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? Next month, we'll perform the ultimate Christmas show abridged in Washington State at the Edmonds Center for the Arts on December 3rd, in Olympia on December 4th, and the Capitol Theater in Yakima on December 12th, as well as the Reeser Center in Beaverton, Oregon on December 10th. Sign up for our newsletter or check out the touring page at our website, ReduceShakespeare.com, or our social media pages for venue and ticket information. Now back to my conversation with Malkia Stampley, the director of the Goodman Theater's 48th annual production of A Christmas Carol, which is in previews now and opens this Sunday night.
I come from musical theater. My mom is a musician. She plays the organ and she's a lovely singer. Mm. And my dad is an orator. He's a pastor. And then his family, they're all singers, as well as my mom's. And there's six of us. My parents had six kids, which means it was a ready-made choir. So I've been singing in church and the church plays and then in school my whole life. And I was introduced to more plays, I'd say, in college. But otherwise, in my heart, I'm a musical theater artist.
Yeah. See, in my heart too, that's why I said it that way. Cause in my heart I am too, but like I'm not a triple threat. I'm sort of barely a double threat.
You have a lovely voice. I sing it and speaking too, of course, but I hear you with those harmonies. You're doing so well.
I appreciate that, but nobody's ever going to hire me to be in a musical. Again, for me, this is one of the pleasures of being in this show, is that there are so many different kinds of folks I get to work with. I never get to work with. I never get to work on a production this size, and I never get to work on a show that has this much music. And what I love about this production is that it is not campy. It is not a parody. It has musical elements, but it is not a musical. Because finding that balance is so tricky. You know, walking that tonal line is such a tightrope. And so it's been fun watching you in rehearsal figure out where those lines are, and all of us trying to make it happen the way you want it to happen.
Totally. And I'm a firm believer in, there's musicality in how we speak, you know.
And this language, this rich Dickensian language has its own music. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Totally. So then, because we're already writing that line with the dialogue and with the familiarity of the story, like there's something also musical about a memory. Musical about in the way that we tell a story that everyone knows, you're allowed to speed up certain parts because we all know it, or you're allowed to really relish in the luxurious, slower moments because you know that we're all going to share this emotional catharsis together. Right. So, but then I looked at that as permission then to lean in to the fun, lean in to, those really bright, joyful, musical areas. And that's what I did, you know, this year. I really focused in then on the Fezziwigs. And and I feel like most productions do, but I went, if we're going to do it, then we're going to do it. Yeah. And if we're not doing it, how do we then amplify the silence? And so it's been a fun journey going in and out that way. But this story, I'd say almost more than any other, and outside of many Shakespeare examples, is it allows you to do that.
Yeah.
Where some days at the end of rehearsal, I go, okay, I just felt like I rehearsed a one-man show and then a Shakespeare production. Oh, and then a musical and then a theater for young audiences production. It's all over the place. And so then what is the thread? What is the connecting dots for each of those scenes?
That is so true. This play and this production is all of those kinds of things. And it plays so well on all those different levels.
I never even think about it, but someone brought it up to me. They're like, you know, you're the first woman of color to direct this production in 48 years in at the Goodman. I don't know of many who've directed it across the country, not that I could think of in my career. It'd be, I don't know if I could dare say none, but although I don't look at it as an added pressure, I am aware of what it means. And I'd say as a woman of color, I'm not really interested in being the first of anything because that means that there's a long history of some reason why there was none. And I'm changing the trajectory and I'm changing the future in a way. But I don't want to be the first. And so then if I can, in this role, encourage another woman of color or Black woman, even more specifically, to think, oh, I can direct A Christmas Carol. I can lead that. I never, never in my wildest dreams thought that I'd ever be asked to direct a production like this. And I think it goes back to it did feel like my story. It really did. I love A Christmas Carol, but I didn't know that others thought that it could be my story. Like that, it's that I hope that we're knocking that door down. Because representation matters, not just on stage, but in the, in our choreographer, our first person of color to choreograph this production. It means a lot. And what I love about the Goodman's Christmas Carol, and I hope is what happens at other productions, is that you get to kind of grow up in this show. Yeah. And so to see folks who've been in an offstage understudy hoping to go on to then being an onstage cast member, to then getting their first Equity contract, to then maybe being a dance captain. You see the growth, or assistant sound designer to then being sound designer. Like that's what tradition can offer us, room for new voices who will carry on the torch and who will evolve, but with such an immense respect and honor for those who came before us. And I really feel like I'm carrying the torch that Henry Godinez and Henry Wishcamper and many others, Jessica Thebus and Chuck Smith, who've directed this in the past, and Bill Brown. It really is an honor, and I know I won't be the last woman of color, I don't want to ever forget then how special it is that I am.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, except for one more thing, which I'll share with you in about 60 seconds, so stick around. The Goodman Theater's production of A Christmas Carol, directed by Malkia Stampley, is already in previews and opens this Sunday night, November 23rd, 2025, and runs until New Year's Eve. Go to goodmantheater.org for more information. Then send us your timeless holiday tale via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com, or throw comments to us over on the socials or on our own actual website, reducedshakespeare.com, or visit my website, theshakespearience.com. Thanks, as always, to Not Tiny or Timmy Matthew Croak. Web services by Ginger Power Limited. Music by John Weber and Garage Band. And this week by Eric Essex, whose holiday album, My Gift to You, is in regular rotation in my house this time of year. Go to ericessex.net for more information. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Glenn Dobbs. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Lewis Byard, the author of, among other fantastic novels, Mr. Timothy, the story of Tiny Tim all grown up. And as always, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 989 2967ths of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
Well, thank you for this, Austin. I really appreciate the support and coverage of this show.
I love having these conversations. If we could have these conversations in a bar, that's the only way we would make it better.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.